In fact, intellectual ability isn't that important for success at meditation. Meditation is about attention and awareness. If you can listen to this book and follow the instructions, you have more than enough intelligence to learn to meditate. For that matter, even if you don't understand some of what you hear here, by just following the basic instructions for each stage, you will succeed. Some doubt they have the necessary self-discipline. But if you can exercise regularly, or go to work or school, you can establish a practice. The key factor isn't discipline, but rather motivation and habits. If you find yourself questioning whether you have enough discipline to meditate, instead, re-examine your motivation. Without motivation, discipline won't help much. Making meditation a habit is also critical. Because we're in the habit of going to work, even when reluctant, we do it anyway, and often without giving any particular thought to the consequences. Habit is powerful. In stage one, we discussed ways to create the conditions for your practice to become a habit. Doubt obviously stands in the way of persistence. Conversely, the meditation factor of sustained attention, achieved through consistent effort, is what overcomes doubt. That is, as you keep applying yourself, you'll learn that you're capable of sustaining attention and achieving other positive results. Success leads to trust in the practice and in yourself. Once you realize that, you'll completely overcome doubt. The five hindrances. Hindrance: worldly desire. Explanation: pursuit of pleasures related to our material existence and the desire to avoid their opposites, gain, loss, pleasure, pain, fame, obscurity, praise, blame. Opposing meditation factor: unification of mind. A unified and blissful mind has no reason to chase worldly desires. Hindrance: aversion. Explanation: a negative mental state involving judgment, rejection, and denial. Includes hatred, anger, resentment, dissatisfaction, criticism, impatience, self-accusation, and boredom. Opposing meditation factor: pleasure, happiness. There's little room for negativity in a mind filled with bliss. Hindrance: laziness and lethargy. Laziness appears when the cost of an activity seems to outweigh the benefits. Lethargy manifests as a lack of energy, procrastination, and low motivation. Opposing meditation factor: directed attention. In meditation, just do it means directing attention to the meditation object to counter procrastination and loss of mental energy. Hindrance: agitation due to remorse and worry. Explanation: remorse for unwise, unwholesome, immoral, or illegal activities. Worry about consequences for past actions, or about things you imagine might happen to you. Worry and remorse make it hard to focus mental resources on anything else. Opposing meditation factor: meditative joy. Joy overcomes worry because it produces confidence and optimism. Joy overcomes remorse because a joyful person regrets past harms and is eager to set things right. Hindrance: doubt. Explanation: a biased, unconscious mental process focused on negative possible outcomes. The kind of uncertainty that makes us hesitate and keeps us from making the effort needed to validate something through our own experience. Self-doubt saps our will and undermines intentions. Opposing meditation factor: sustained attention. This is achieved through consistent effort. Success leads to trust, and doubt disappears. The seven problems. The classical five hindrances give a general description of the psychological obstacles to meditation. Different combinations of these hindrances lead to specific challenges I call the seven problems. You will face them all as you progress through the stages, and in each stage we provide the details about specific problems and how to overcome them. Use the list as an easy reference guide linking specific problems to their hindrances. This will help you quickly grasp what problem stems from what hindrance so you can apply the appropriate antidote. 1. Procrastination and resistance to practicing. The hindrances of laziness and doubt contribute to procrastination and resistance to practicing. If we are not convinced meditating is worth the time and trouble, laziness manifests as resistance. This is where doubt enters in. You may begin to doubt your own abilities, the teacher, or the method. Any of these can strengthen procrastination and undermine your motivation and determination. 2. Distractions, forgetting, and mind wandering. The hindrances of worldly desire, aversion, agitation, and doubt can all manifest as distractions that cause forgetting, then mind wandering. Thoughts about the worldly dharmas, wealth, pleasure, fame, and praise, are far more engaging for a novice than the sensations of the breath. Even trivial desires, like wanting to check your email, are distracting enough to cause you to forget the breath. Aversion to bodily pain, noises, or other distractions can disturb your meditation, as can feelings of impatience, boredom, or dissatisfaction with your progress. The emotional charge of feelings like anger and resentment makes you want to mull them over, rehashing conflicts and planning responses. Worry and remorse likewise produce distracting thoughts about the past or future that take you away from the present. Thoughts related to doubt easily become distractions as well. 3. Impatience. Impatience is rooted in several of the same hindrances as distraction and mind wandering: aversion, worldly desire, and doubt. The difference is that impatience manifests as a disruptive emotion rather than as a distracting thought or memory. 4. Monkey mind. Agitation due to worry and remorse often causes monkey mind. It can also be caused by anger and aversion, the anticipation of fulfilling a strong desire, or even the restlessness that comes with impatience. In fact, monkey mind can stem from any of the hindrances, except laziness and lethargy. 5. Self-doubt. The hindrance of doubt is at the root of self-doubt, as discussed before. 6. Dullness, drowsiness, and falling asleep. The hindrance of laziness and lethargy create dullness and drowsiness, but it's mostly due to lethargy. Lethargy is a decrease in mental energy that manifests as a comfortable, pleasant dullness of perception, or as heavy drowsiness. As mental activity dies down, mental energy falls, as do interest, awareness, and responsiveness. 7. Physical discomfort. Worldly desire and aversion are what make physical discomfort into a problem. An itch, for example, is simply stimulation of the skin, but it turns into suffering when aversion and the desire for the itch to go away arise. The 7 problems and their antidotes. Problem: procrastination and resistance to practicing. Antidote: frequently recall the benefits of practice. Constantly refresh and renew your motivation, and just do it. See stage 1. Problem: distractions, forgetting, and mind wandering. Antidote: each part of the problem is addressed sequentially. In stage 2, work with mind wandering. In stage 3, work on overcoming forgetting. In stages 4 through 6, work on overcoming all distractions. Problem: impatience. Antidote: rather than identifying with impatience, learn to observe it objectively. Cultivate joy, peace, contentment, and equanimity. See stage 2. Problem: monkey mind. Antidote: an agitated, overly energized mind is in constant motion and can't stay focused on anything. The antidote is to get grounded in the body. See stage 2. Problem: self-doubt. Antidote: Do everything you can to keep your motivation strong. Don't compare yourself to others. Make meditation a habit. Problem: dullness, drowsiness, and sleepiness. Antidote: decreased mental energy leads to dullness, then drowsiness, and sleep. Counter strong dullness by energizing the mind using techniques described in stages 3 and 4. In stage 5, work on overcoming subtle dullness. Problem: physical discomfort. Antidote: find the most comfortable position possible. Refer to stage 1. Use physical discomfort as part of the practice to develop the insight that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. Refer to stages 3 and 4. In conclusion, the 5 hindrances are more than just obstacles to meditation. They are the same obstacles that thwart a happy, productive existence. By practicing meditation and overcoming them, we accomplish something of inestimable value, which has far-reaching benefits for every other part of our lives as well. When you achieve stage 10, these hindrances are completely overcome, absent from both meditation and daily life. And as long as you can regularly reach shamatha in your practice, or if you achieve sufficient insight, they will not return. Stage 2. Interrupted attention and overcoming mind wandering. 2. The goal for stage 2 is to shorten the periods of mind wandering and extend the periods of sustained attention to the meditation object. Willpower can't prevent the mind from forgetting the breath, nor can you force yourself to become aware that the mind is wandering. Instead, just hold the intention to appreciate the aha moment that recognizes mind wandering, while gently but firmly redirecting attention back to the breath. Then intend to engage with the breath as fully as possible without losing peripheral awareness. In time, the simple actions flowing from these 3 intentions will become mental habits. Periods of mind wandering will become shorter. Periods of attention to the breath will grow longer, and you'll have achieved your goal. Practice goals for stage 2. Stage 1 was preparatory, teaching you how to establish a practice and getting you seated and attentive to the sensations of the breath at the tip of the nose. Stage 2 marks the beginning of the process of training the mind as you try to stay focused on the breath. It takes work to calm the mind, but you will work smart, not hard, using finesse, patience, and positive reinforcement. Keeping your attention on the breath may seem like a simple task, but you'll quickly discover how challenging it can be. Most novice meditators are surprised by how unruly the mind is. You may feel like you're trying to tame a wild animal, or even that meditation is making your mind more agitated. In reality, you're just becoming aware of what's always been going on in the mind. Recognizing this is an important first step. There are 2 primary goals for stage 2: shortening the periods of mind wandering and sustaining attention on the breath for longer periods. You will address mind wandering with positive reinforcement, learning to truly appreciate the moment you wake up to the fact that attention strayed. You achieve longer intervals of sustained attention by learning to actively engage with the breath. The obstacles at this stage are forgetting, mind wandering, monkey mind, and impatience. Although we'll discuss forgetting at this stage, dealing with it as an obstacle won't be addressed until stage 3. When you start this stage, your meditations mostly consist of interrupted continuity of mind wandering. That is, most of your time is taken up by mind wandering, interrupted by brief periods of attention to breath. By the end of this stage, you'll experience the opposite. Most of your time will go to attending to the breath, and you'll only have brief periods of mind wandering or interrupted continuity of attention. You've mastered this stage when episodes of mind wandering are brief, while your attention to the breath lasts much longer. The problems of forgetting and mind wandering. The combined problems of forgetting and mind wandering will dominate your meditation sessions in stage two. Forgetting means we forget the meditation object, as well as our intention to focus on the breath. Mind wandering is what happens after we've forgotten what we were doing. The mind will wander from thought to thought, often for a long time, before we wake up to what is happening. At the root of these problems are the various types of spontaneous movements of attention described in the overview. We place our attention on the breath, but the mind produces distractions. Alternating attention scans these distractions for something more interesting, important, exciting, intense, or novel. Interest and importance are judged according to the perceived ability to increase pleasure or decrease pain, cause happiness or unhappiness, or improve or threaten your physical well-being. When something captures attention, the breath is abandoned, and forgetting happens. When attention tires of one distraction, it moves to another, usually through chains of association. This kind of mind wandering is the main obstacle you'll work on at this stage. Why does attention move this way? It's a matter of evolution. Selection pressures have favored spontaneously moving attention more strongly than stable attention. Constantly moving attention keeps us on the lookout for whatever will help us to survive and reproduce. Even if you're a spiritual seeker, intent on discovering the ultimate meaning of life, if your attention didn't wander at times, your house might burn down around you. So, while forgetting and mind wandering might be obstacles in meditation, they're a normal and necessary part of everyday life, letting us use our limited conscious resources more efficiently. The mind of an adept meditator still moves spontaneously in daily life, allocating consciousness where it's needed, but not getting captured unnecessarily. Still, stable attention is useful for survival, so we all have that inherent capacity as well. In other words, evolution is not selected against stable attention, even though we're not as strongly predisposed to use it. When we meditate, we're training and strengthening this inborn but less used capacity. By cultivating stable attention, meditation calms the wandering mind and creates inner peace. When attention is accompanied by greater awareness, we have strong mindfulness, meaning we can refocus and stabilize our attention wherever and whenever it's needed. Awakening from mind wandering. A critical moment occurs during mind wandering when you suddenly realize you're no longer observing the breath. You abruptly wake up to the fact that you weren't doing what you had intended. It's like suddenly remembering a phone call you forgot to make or an unmailed check. The thought just pops into your head, as if from nowhere. Even though you were preoccupied with something else, some unconscious part of your mind made you consciously aware that you were supposed to be attending to the breath. Our natural tendency is to quickly return to the breath, often forcefully and with self-judgment. This reaction is typical of our approach to everyday tasks. We rush to get back on track. During meditation, however, if you return to the breath as soon as you realize you've lost it, you'll miss a key opportunity for training the mind. Awakening to the present is an important opportunity to understand and appreciate how your mind works. You've just had a minor epiphany, an aha moment of realizing there's a disconnect between what you're doing, thinking about something else, and what you intended to do. Watch the breath. But this wasn't something you did, nor can you voluntarily make it happen. The process that discovered this disconnect isn't under your conscious control. It happens unconsciously. But when the findings become conscious, you have an aha moment of introspective awareness. The way to overcome mind wandering is by training this unconscious process to make the discovery and bring it into consciousness sooner and more often. Yet how do you train something that happens unconsciously? Simply take a moment to enjoy and appreciate waking up from mind wandering. Savor the sense of being more fully conscious and present. Cherish your epiphany and encourage yourself to have more of them. Conscious intention and affirmation powerfully influence our unconscious processes. By valuing this moment, you're training the mind through positive reinforcement to wake up more quickly in the future. Also, avoid becoming annoyed or self-critical about mind wandering. It doesn't matter that your mind wandered. What's important is that you realized it. To become annoyed or self-critical in the aha moment will slow down your progress. You can't scold the mind into changing, especially when dealing with entrenched mental patterns like forgetting and mind wandering. Even worse, the negative feedback will get associated with the most recent event, the spontaneous arising of introspective awareness, and you'll end up discouraging the very process that stops mind wandering. It's like telling your unconscious you don't want to have the mind wandering interrupted. If negative emotions do arise, simply notice them and let them come, let them be, and let them go. It's like training a pet. Consistent, immediate positive reinforcements of behaviors we want will be far more effective than punishing behaviors we don't. As you keep repeating this technique, introspective awareness will eventually intervene before you completely forget the meditation object, the goal of stage 3. Over time, introspective awareness will grow so strong that it's always present, and you'll never lose the meditation object as your focus of attention, the goal of stage 4. In fact, moving through all 10 stages depends on positively reinforcing, cultivating, and strengthening introspective awareness. Thus, beginning at this stage, always appreciate it whenever it arises, and make satisfaction and pleasure a cornerstone of your whole practice. Directing and redirecting attention. Purposely directing and redirecting your attention is an important part of meditation training. You want to continuously cultivate your ability to intentionally direct attention to any object you choose, regardless of its intrinsic interest. You do this by redirecting attention over and over again back to the meditation object whenever it wanders. This is how directed attention leads to stable attention. If you're reluctant to let go of an object you find particularly engaging, evoke discipline and diligence. Discipline doesn't mean forcing the mind to do something it can't, but rather a firm, intentional resolve to let go of an object that's captured your attention and return to the breath. Being diligent means doing this consistently and promptly. Like a muscle, the more you exercise this faculty, the stronger it grows. In other words, your conscious intention to redirect attention, repeated often enough, will gradually train your unconscious to do it automatically and almost instantly. Then, intentional movements of attention will replace spontaneous movements, and other things don't capture your attention. By stage 4, redirecting attention to the meditation object will become completely automatic. Sustaining attention on the meditation object. Once you've redirected attention, you want to increase the periods of sustained attention to the meditation object. A technique that helps is called following the breath. This is a series of tasks, like a game, to help you actively engage with, take interest in, and fully investigate the breath, countering the natural tendency for attention to shift. To begin, try identifying the exact moment the in-breath starts and the exact moment it ends. Likewise, try noticing the exact moment the out-breath begins and ends. You will find the beginning of the in-breath easy to identify because of the sharp impact of cool, incoming air on the skin. The start of the out-breath will probably be obvious as well, though less distinct since outgoing air is warmer. By contrast, the exact ends of the in- and out-breaths are less obvious. You will also notice brief pauses between the in- and out-breaths and between the out- and in-breaths. If you find it hard to perceive the ends of the in- and out-breaths clearly, it helps to identify the pauses first, then work backward. Once you've found the pauses with some certainty, as well as the start and end of each part of the breath cycle, try observing all these points with equal clarity. These tasks engage the mind by giving it a challenge. At first, the sensations seem to come and go so quickly and are so subtle that it's truly a challenge. Yet with practice, these tasks will stabilize your attention on the meditation object. For now, don't worry about observing the breath in a nonverbal, non-discursive, or non-conceptual way. Instead, do anything that helps you follow the breath and clearly identify the various points in the cycle. Silently talk to yourself and think about the breath as much as you want. If it's helpful, you can note beginning, end. If you're visually inclined, create a mental image such as a circle expanding and contracting with the breath. Understand, you're not trying to imagine what the breath looks like. Rather, you're using an image to help you follow the sensations. The image should be driven by the sensations, not superimposed on them. If you're more kinesthetically inclined, imagine some type of motion corresponding to the breath cycle, such as your body expanding and contracting. As your perception grows sharper and you can clearly identify all the points in the breath cycle, it becomes less challenging and your interest fades. Remember, willpower is not very effective for anything in meditation, including sustaining attention, so the mind must find further challenges to stay actively engaged. The next challenge is to observe as many different sensations as possible during the course of each in and out breath, and to discern the pauses as clearly as possible. Quick review of Stage 2 practice. The instructions for this stage are simple. You sit down, finish the preparation for practice, make the gradual transition to the sensations of the breath at the tip of the nose, and count 10 breaths. Hold the intention to follow and sustain attention on the breath sensations at the nose. Very soon, however, you will find yourself forgetting the breath and mind wandering, sometimes for seconds and sometimes for many minutes. Eventually, you'll abruptly wake up to the fact that even though you intended to watch the breath, you've been thinking about something else. Feel happy and pleased about this aha moment of introspective awareness. Then, gently direct attention back to the breath. To engage more fully with the meditation object, practice following the breath. As long as you appreciate the moment of waking up to mind wandering, diligently return attention to the object, and fully engage with it, you're on the right track. If you sit through the entire session without getting discouraged, and if you keep returning to the breath when your mind wanders, consider your meditation a total success. You'll probably be surprised at how quickly your powers of perception sharpen up. This is the first change you'll experience as your mind starts growing stronger. Later, as you become more mindful, you'll no longer need the mental words, images, and games, and in fact, they become obstacles. So let them fall away naturally when they're no longer useful. This may not happen completely until well into Stage 4 or even the start of Stage 5. In the meantime, don't hesitate to use these techniques as long as they help. Focusing on the meditation object without losing peripheral awareness. Stages 1 through 4 aim at gaining more stability of attention. Beginning meditators often try to stabilize attention by focusing intensely on the breath and pushing everything else out of awareness. Don't do this. Don't try to limit peripheral awareness. Instead, to cultivate mindfulness, do just the opposite. Allow sounds, sensations, thoughts, and feelings to continue in the background. Be careful of the tendency to become so closely focused on the breath that peripheral awareness collapses. If that happens, you'll forget the breath more easily. But if you maintain peripheral awareness, you'll eventually learn to notice potential distractions when they arise, and attention is less likely to be captured. If one of these background distractions does momentarily capture attention, simply let it be while redirecting attention back to the meditation object. The approach is always the same. Let it come, let it be, and let it go. Learn to accept these distractions, recognizing that they will go away by themselves, only to be replaced by others. Stay on task while staying relaxed. Just enjoy the process. The meditation object will not always be at the center of attention. In stages 1 through 3, you train the mind so that by stage 4, the meditation object is never completely lost from attention. But at this stage, it doesn't matter if the breath is at the center of attention or somewhere in the background. Always feel satisfied with any stretch of time where the meditation object remains in the field of conscious awareness. During these early stages, your awareness will include a whole range of other objects, such as sounds, thoughts, feelings, and bodily sensations. Expect your attention to alternate between these and the breath. They're all distractions competing for your attention, so don't be surprised when one captures your attention. The meditation object will either slip into the background or drop out of awareness completely. In either case, once you realize this has happened, simply return the focus of your attention to the meditation object. You are not in control of your mind. Mind wandering happens constantly. It's so much a part of our normal experience that we rarely notice, leading us to believe we are the masters of our own minds, in constant control. Meditation shatters that myth pretty quickly. Even the simplest instruction, like keep your attention focused on the breath, reveals how the mind, in a sense, has a mind of its own. Believing we should be in control of the mind only creates problems for our practice. Once we discover how little control we really have, we may even decide something is wrong with the mind, that it's not working the way it should. When we objectify the mind like this, we turn it into a dysfunctional thing. If, on the other hand, we identify the mind with ourself, you may think of yourself as having failed because you can't prevent the mind from wandering. Either view casts mind wandering in an unfavorable light and makes us feel frustrated. Rather than pass judgment, let your meditation practice illuminate what's really going on. There is no self in control of the mind, and therefore nobody to blame. The mind is a collective of mental processes operating either through consensus or through a very temporary dominance of one process over the others. One part of your mind might wear a big hat marked I for a short period, but it has no inherent ability to keep that up for long. Inevitably, some other mental process with a different agenda and different conditioning takes over and becomes the I. If the controlling part of the mind pushes too hard or grows weaker for some reason, then another part of the mind takes control. In short, there is no you who's the boss of your mind. Ultimately, meditation means training a complex, multi-part system, the mind, to work cooperatively, coherently, and consistently through a shared consensus toward common goals. If you can embrace that fact and let go of the notions of I, me, and my mind, your practice will go much more smoothly. Calming the monkey mind. Monkey mind describes an especially agitated state where attention jumps rapidly from one thing to the next, like an excited monkey. This is quite different from mind wandering, which happens at a slower pace. With monkey mind, you'll notice attention doesn't stay anywhere for more than a few seconds, moving from the breath, to sounds, to sensations, to thoughts, to memories, then maybe back to the breath again. This, too, is different from mind wandering, where you can get lost for long periods in a single thought or chain of thoughts. While monkey mind may also keep returning to a troublesome issue, it will only stay there for a moment before it goes back to wildly swinging from thought to sensation to image. This constant movement of the mind makes you feel restless and must be dealt with differently than ordinary mind wandering. The antidote that calms monkey mind is to become grounded in the body. This means expanding the space in which you allow attention to move, to include the entire body, and, if needed, the other senses as well. In other words, return to step 1 or 2 of the gradual 4-step transition to the meditation object described in stage 1. The agitation of monkey mind is due to thoughts and emotions, So body awareness works by shifting attention and awareness away from the contents and activities of the mind. Some grounding techniques include scanning the sensations of the body part by part, attending to any strong bodily sensation, evoking whole body awareness, or becoming aware of other sensations, like sounds. The basic rule for training the mind in meditation is to always intentionally select the locus of attention. That is, you must intentionally choose the area, that is, breath sensations, bodily sensations, thoughts, or some combination, you want attention restricted to. Every practice for achieving stable attention is based on this principle. With monkey mind, attention is constantly moving, so you finesse the situation by intentionally expanding this area. You let the mind keep moving, but only within the boundaries that you've intentionally set. Instead of trying to hold the monkey still, you give it a larger cage to move in. Overcoming impatience and cultivating joy. It's inevitable that fairly soon you'll get impatient and think, this isn't working, there must be an easier way, or I could be doing something better with my time. These thoughts and feelings arise because something you wanted, hoped for, or expected hasn't happened. For instance, you may have thought that after a period of diligent practice, you'd be at stage 3. Instead, you find your attention isn't very stable, and there's still a lot of mind wandering going on. Disappointment that meditation isn't meeting your expectations gets combined with worldly desire for some alternative form of gratification. Unfulfilled expectations and waning enthusiasm bring boredom, which amplifies any aversion you feel toward physical or mental discomfort. As the mind focuses on these negative results, doubts may arise. The end result is the insidious and pervasive emotional state of impatience. We tend to identify with it, thinking, I am impatient, which helps sustain it, undermines our motivation, and triggers other unhelpful thoughts like, I'm just too impatient to meditate today. However, these thoughts and feelings are actually caused by something else going on behind the scenes. That is, impatience is really the result of deeper unconscious conflicts occurring in the mind. Remember that the mind is not a single thing, but rather a collective of many different mental processes. Each has its own purpose and goals, but all try to serve the happiness and well-being of the whole. When you're dissatisfied with your practice, it creates doubt and uncertainty, causing different parts of the mind to urge you toward other sources of gratification. Once these mental processes are no longer unified around the intention to meditate, internal conflict develops. One part of the mind may want to meditate, while others want to ponder, plan, or fantasize. These different minds share the same goal, personal satisfaction and happiness. But because your expectations have been disappointed, they disagree on how best to achieve that happiness. A mind in conflict and disharmony prevents us from establishing a relaxed, alert, and peaceful meditative state. If you keep trying to meditate with this divided and therefore less effective mind, it just leads to more disappointment and doubt, ultimately making you even more impatient. You have set up a disharmony, dissatisfaction, impatience feedback loop. The less harmony among the different parts of the mind, the more dissatisfaction and impatience you'll feel. And the more impatience, the greater the disharmony as different minds keep pressing harder for alternatives to meditation. And on it goes. Usually, we try to resolve the internal conflict in one of two unskillful ways. We give in and do something else, or we try to force the mind to comply. But when one part of the mind tries to force itself on other parts, this only creates a struggle that feels like an exercise of willpower. And willpower can never succeed in overcoming this kind of internal resistance. As one part of the mind tries harder and harder to rule the roost, the struggle only increases, feeding the disharmony, dissatisfaction, impatience cycle. The best way to avoid or resolve impatience is to enjoy your practice. While this isn't always easy, a good start is to consistently focus on the positive rather than the negative aspects of your meditation. Notice when the body is relaxed and comfortable, or when the mind is focused and alert. Seek out and acknowledge these rewarding aspects, no matter how unimportant they seem. Savor a fleeting sensation of physical pleasure, the satisfaction of following a whole breath cycle, or the sense of accomplishment that comes with just sitting down and making the effort to meditate. As these pleasurable feelings grow stronger, relish and encourage them so they grow stronger still. Also, remember that impatience is only an emotion. Don't identify with it by thinking, "I am impatient." Regard it as just one more feeling that arises and passes away, thinking to yourself, "Impatience is arising." Seek out the positive qualities of your present moment experience. Follow the sensations of the breath as best you can, and simply observe impatience when it arises without getting caught up in it. And count not getting caught up in impatience as another success. Use the same strategy when you face the problems of forgetting or mind wandering. Focus on the only event that's really important, which is that you woke up to whatever was going on. Then return to following the breath, accepting whatever happens and feeling happy with every success, which will lead to more satisfaction and further success. Always recall that success comes through repetition with a relaxed attitude, rather than from effortful striving. By making meditation satisfying and enjoyable, the part of the mind that wants to meditate can get the other parts to stop resisting and join in. Mental processes come into harmony. As the mind becomes more unified, there's less internal conflict. Attention grows more stable, and feelings of pleasure and happiness increase. As they increase, the different mental processes come into greater and greater harmony until the mind enters a state of joy, creating a harmony-joy feedback loop, the opposite of the disharmony-dissatisfaction-impatience loop. Bringing the different parts of the mind into harmony is crucial for achieving one of the major goals of meditation, unification of mind. Therefore, in each stage, cultivate peace, contentment, happiness, and joy at every opportunity. Also, create these feelings in every wholesome way you can in daily life, and bring this joy to your practice. A formula for success in meditation. Here's a formula you should commit to memory to make joy and relaxation a natural part of your practice. Relax and look for the joy. Observe. Let it come, let it be, and let it go. Recite it every time you sit, especially when you catch yourself thinking meditation is difficult. Relax means let go of any mental or physical tension as soon as you become aware of it. Look for the joy means notice the pleasant aspects of the practice in every moment. Negative thoughts and feelings are inevitable, but you don't need to get caught up in them and let them color your practice. Even when you have pain somewhere, there will always be a pleasant feeling elsewhere. Likewise, feelings of peace, satisfaction, and happiness are often present. Hold them in awareness so they become a regular part of your conscious experience. Observe means be aware of what's happening in the moment without reacting, rejecting, or clinging to anything. Whether attention is stable or scattered, if restlessness arises or dullness sets in, if the mind is clear and calm, or if some distracting thoughts keep surfacing, just observe what is, and don't judge. Let it come, let it be, and let it go, was described in stage one, and means exactly what it says. No matter what thoughts or feeling arise, don't suppress or struggle against them or let them take you away from the practice. They'll disappear on their own in time. Conclusion. Consider every obstacle an opportunity to learn about the mind. If you practice diligently every day, it won't be long before you have strengthened introspective awareness until periods of mind wandering become fairly brief. You can quickly but gently direct attention back to the meditation object, and you can sustain attention on the meditation object for longer periods of time. If you don't notice your attention improving much during a single session, trust that it will in the next few days and weeks of practice. If you simply follow these instructions, it will occur on its own, as surely as night follows day. You have mastered this stage when you can consistently maintain your focus on the meditation object for minutes, while mind wandering lasts only seconds. Stage 3. Extended continuity of attention and overcoming forgetting. 3. The goal for Stage 3 is to overcome forgetting and falling asleep. Set your intention to invoke introspective attention frequently, before you've forgotten the breath or fallen asleep, and make corrections as soon as you notice distractions or dullness. Also, intend to sustain peripheral awareness while engaging with the breath as fully as possible. These three intentions and the actions they produce are simply elaborations of those from Stage 2. Once they become habits, you'll rarely forget the breath. Practice goals for Stage 3. You begin Stage 3 with longer periods of sustained attention to the breath. The mind still wanders sometimes, but not for as long. Just keep practicing what you learned in Stage 2, and mind wandering will eventually stop completely. The main goal for this stage is to overcome forgetting. To do this, you'll use the techniques of following the breath and connecting to actively engage with the meditation object and extend periods of uninterrupted attention, and you'll cultivate introspective awareness through the practices of labeling and checking in. These techniques allow you to catch distractions before they lead to forgetting. You will also learn to deal with the pain and drowsiness that often arise at this stage. You have mastered Stage 3 when you no longer forget the breath. This is also the first milestone achievement, continuous attention to the meditation object. How forgetting happens. Our field of conscious awareness contains much more than just the meditation object. It also includes an awareness of bodily sensations and things in our surroundings, as well as a constant stream of thoughts and feelings. Any of these is a potential distraction. But an actual distraction is one that competes with the meditation object for your attention. When attention alternates between the breath and a sound, thought, feeling, or bodily sensation, flickering even briefly between the two, it's a distraction. There are typically several such distractions in your field of conscious awareness at any one time. You might not notice these movements of attention because they're so rapid. Nevertheless, this alternating attention creates a scattering of attention to distractions. These are the distractions that potentially cause forgetting. There are two distinct types of distractions, subtle and gross. The difference between the two is the amount of time attention is on the distraction versus the breath. When less time is spent on the distraction and the meditation object remains the primary focus of attention, it's called a subtle distraction. These subtle distractions, along with peripheral awareness, are what make up the background of conscious experience. However, if one of these distractions takes center stage, occupying your attention for most of the time and causing the meditation object to slip into the background, it becomes a gross distraction. As you follow the breath, attention alternates between the breath and a constantly changing variety of subtle distractions in the background. Sooner or later, a subtle distraction comes along that's engaging enough to displace the meditation object as your primary focus of attention. At that moment, the subtle distraction becomes a gross distraction, and the meditation object slips into the background. At first, your attention will alternate between the gross distraction and the meditation object. Yet, because the distraction is more compelling than the breath, your attention becomes increasingly focused on it. Eventually, attention stops returning to the meditation object altogether. Even without any attention, the breath may linger in peripheral awareness for a little while. But the longer the gross distraction occupies your attention, the more the breath fades, until you forget it entirely. Forgetting often happens gradually. But if the distracting thought or sensation is highly charged, attention can get captured quickly and intensely, and the meditation object disappears at once from consciousness. Still, whether it happens quickly or slowly, the result is the same. You forget about the breath, and you also forget what you were doing. Then, once attention tires of that distraction, it moves on to something else. Mind wandering begins. Overcoming forgetting. You overcome forgetting by catching distractions before they cause you to forget. To do this, you first need to extend the periods of attention to the breath so you can look introspectively at the mind and see what's happening. Extended periods of stable attention are achieved using the technique of following the breath from stage two. However, in this stage, you'll look at the breath sensations in much greater detail and will learn the related technique of connecting. The other key to overcoming forgetting is cultivating introspective awareness. This allows you to see the distractions that are about to make you forget the breath. The practices of labeling and checking in will develop this ability. Think of the untrained mind as a turbulent sea. Attention to the breath is like an anchor, making the raft we float on steady enough to stand on and look out from. When we can't hold our attention for more than a few breaths, our anchor isn't secure, and the raft is shaky. Before we know it, we get swept away by a wave. Yet if we can hold our focus longer, making the raft more stable, we can see an approaching wave and maneuver in a way that lessens or avoids its impact. This analogy is helpful for understanding how extended periods of attention, along with introspective awareness, allow us to correct for distractions before they cause forgetting. Sustaining attention through following and connecting. Following and connecting are tools you will use over many stages to develop greater vividness, clarity, and stability of attention. At this stage, you use them to sustain attention on the meditation object for longer periods without losing peripheral awareness. Both methods give the mind a series of simple tasks to perform, or games to play, that make following the breath more interesting. This helps counter the tendency for attention to abandon the breath for something else. Following and connecting should always be done in a relaxed manner, rather than with driven intensity. Following. As you progress through the stages, you will follow the breath with ever closer attention in pursuit of ever more detail. In stage two, this meant identifying the beginning and end of both the in and out breaths, as well as the pauses separating the two. Your first goal in stage three, if you haven't reached it already, is to discern each of these with equal clarity. When you try to perceive all parts of the breath equally, it may feel like you're somehow forcing the breath to make some parts stand out more clearly. Indeed, the breath will change as a result of your observation. When you consciously intend to discern certain features more clearly, unconscious mental processes try to help by exaggerating the breath. This is perfectly all right, as long as you don't do it intentionally. This is a subtle but important point. If you didn't deliberately and consciously alter your breath, don't fall into the common trap of taking ownership of something you didn't do. When the breath changes due to unconscious processes, even though it suits our conscious purposes, you didn't do it, so don't interfere. Just notice that it has changed and keep observing everything passively and objectively, letting the breath continue as is. The sensations may also grow weaker, or even disappear from one nostril, or alternate between nostrils. This, too, is completely normal, and you don't need to do anything but notice it. Once you can perceive all major points in the breath cycle clearly and vividly, you need a bigger challenge. Next, you'll practice recognizing the individual sensations that make up each in and out breath. First, carefully observe the sensations between the beginning and end of the in-breath until you can recognize three or four distinct sensations every time. Continue to observe the rest of the breath cycle just as clearly as before. When you can consistently recognize several sensations with every in-breath, do the same with the out-breath. Your intention will be to follow the breath with vividness and clarity, and to be aware of very fine details. If you miss the mark, don't worry. You always have the next breath to work with. With practice, the number of sensations you recognize will increase. It's possible to consistently identify between 4 and maybe a dozen or more sensations with each in-breath, and a somewhat smaller number for each out-breath. The sensations are subtler. However, that doesn't mean you'll necessarily observe that many. The actual number of sensations you can perceive isn't that important. What matters is that your perception grows sharper, and that you stay interested in and attentive to the breath. As you progress, you may, if necessary, keep increasing the level of detail so the mind stays actively engaged. Even as you engage more closely with the breath, it's very important to also maintain extrospective awareness. This may not be easy. When you focus closely, the mind naturally tends to drop awareness of bodily sensations and external stimuli. Don't let this happen, because you'll become more vulnerable to both forgetting and drowsiness. Furthermore, emphasizing both attention and peripheral awareness at the same time increases the total power of consciousness. More conscious power is the key to making progress in later stages. Finally, when you allow for the full range and content of awareness, there's great potential for insight, even at these early stages. You're not only observing the breath, but watching and learning from the activity of your mind as a whole. Connecting. Once you can clearly discern and easily follow the sensations of the breath, we may need a new challenge to engage your attention. This is why we introduce connecting here, even though it's a more advanced technique. Connecting is an extension of following that involves making comparisons and associations. As you follow the entire breath cycle, begin connecting by observing the two pauses closely and notice which is longer and which is shorter. Next, compare the in and out breaths to each other. Are they the same lengths, or is one longer than the other? When you can compare the lengths clearly, expand the task to include relative changes over time. Are the in and out breaths longer or shorter than they were earlier? If the in-breath was longer than the out-breath, or vice versa, is that still the case? Are the pauses between the in- and out-breaths longer or shorter than they were? Is the longer of the two pauses still the same as before? Once you reach stages 4 and 5, your introspective awareness will have improved enough that you can start connecting the details of the breath cycle to your state of mind. When you find the mind agitated and there are more distractions, ask yourself, is the breath longer or shorter, deeper or shallower, finer or coarser than when the mind is calm? What about the length or depth of the breath during a spell of drowsiness? Do states of agitation, distraction, concentration, and dullness affect the out-breath more or in a different way than they do the in-breath? Do they affect the pause before the in-breath more or less than they affect the pause before the out-breath? In making these kinds of comparisons, you're not just investigating the breath to sharpen and stabilize your attention. You're also learning another way to detect and become more fully aware of subtle and changing states of mind. You'll continue using following and connecting in stages 4 and 5, so don't set your expectations too high right now. You may even find connecting isn't particularly useful at this stage. We describe it here only because there are some who will benefit from using it sooner. Following and connecting in silence. In stage 2, I said it can be helpful to use mental self-talk when following the breath. By now, you've noticed that a lot of the mental activity takes the form of inner dialogue. Like a sports commentator discussing the plays in a game, mental talk becomes a way to follow the movement of attention and gauge the quality of awareness. Yet you may have also noticed that self-talk can cause problems. It's slippery, like quicksilver, flowing from investigating the breath to some other associated topic, then on to another. Suddenly you've gone down the rabbit hole of mind wandering. Therefore, even though occasional self-talk is fine, it's best at this stage to start cutting back on verbal commentary and to appreciate the peaceful silence surrounding the breath. You'll discover you can still follow what's happening and that you're able to think about the meditation object non-verbally. Cultivating introspective awareness through labeling and checking in. So far, you've worked on developing extrospective awareness, and you want to sustain that. Now it's time to start cultivating introspective awareness as well. With introspective awareness, you're aware of what's happening in your mind as you continue to focus attention closely on the breath. You'll train and strengthen your capacity for introspective awareness through the practices of labeling and checking in. Labeling. Up to now, you've relied on spontaneous introspective awareness, or what we've called the aha moment, to alert you to forgetting and mind wandering. When you positively reinforce these spontaneous realizations, awareness learns to catch mind wandering faster and faster, so that now your mind only wanders for a few seconds. However, your awareness probably isn't strong enough for you to recall what distraction was occupying your attention before your aha moment. You have enough conscious power to wake up, but not enough to know what was going on in the mind. It's like when someone suddenly asks you what you're thinking about, but you just can't remember. To strengthen introspective awareness, use labeling to practice identifying the distraction in the very moment you realize you're no longer on the breath. For example, if you catch yourself thinking about your next meal or something that happened yesterday, give the distraction a neutral label, such as thinking, planning, or remembering. Simple, neutral labels are less likely to cause further distractions by getting you caught up in the labeling. If there was a series of thoughts, only label the most recent one. Also, always avoid analyzing distractions, which only creates more distraction. Once you've labeled the distraction, gently direct your attention back to the breath. Often the last thing you were thinking about when you woke up from mind wandering wasn't what initially took you away from the breath. However, as mind wandering happens less often, the distraction you identify and label in that moment will be the same one that caused you to forget. Eventually, the practice of labeling will strengthen your introspective awareness enough so you can consistently identify which distractions are most likely to steal your attention in the first place. Introspective awareness will eventually be strong enough to alert you to a distraction before forgetting happens. Checking in. The second part of cultivating introspective awareness involves checking in using introspective attention. Instead of waiting for introspective awareness to arise spontaneously, as you've done until now, you intentionally turn your attention inward to see what's happening in the mind. Doing this check-in requires longer periods of stable attention. That's why following and connecting are so important at this stage. These techniques give you more stable attention, making it easier to momentarily shift attention and see what's happening in the mind. Yes, checking in disrupts your focus on the breath, but when you pause to reflect on everything happening in your mind, attention needs to shift. At this stage, this is not only completely okay, it's actually the key to cultivating introspective awareness. What you're really doing is training and strengthening introspective awareness by using attention, making awareness of the mind's activity a habit. Remember from the first interlude that peripheral awareness filters through an enormous amount of information and selects what's relevant for attention. But attention also trains peripheral awareness to know which things are important. For example, if you take an interest in sports cars, after a while, every sports car catches your eye. In this case, if you take attentive interest in what's happening in your mind, in particular, whether or not gross distractions are present, you're training awareness to alert you to their presence. Checking in not only strengthens introspective awareness, but also allows you to correct for gross distraction before it causes forgetting. It's like you're intentionally shifting your attention to take a snapshot of the mind's current activity to see if some distraction is about to make you forget. When you notice a gross distraction, tighten up attention on the breath to prevent forgetting. It may also help to take a moment to label the distraction before returning to the breath. Always check in very gently and briefly, turning your attention inward to evaluate how much scattering was just occurring. Is gross distraction present? If so, you know you are about to forget the breath. When you recognize a gross distraction before it completely captures your attention, return your attention to the breath and sharpen up your focus. That will keep you from forgetting. Sometimes, just identifying a gross distraction as a gross distraction is enough to make it dissipate. If it doesn't, engage with the breath as fully as you can until it does. If it keeps returning, just keep repeating this simple process. Train yourself to check in regularly with introspective attention. To start, try every half dozen breaths or so, but don't start counting them. Checking in should become a habit. Each time you check in with attention, you strengthen the power and consistency of introspective awareness. Also, the more often checking in leads to discovering gross distraction and tightening up your focus, the less often you will forget the breath. Putting the practices together. Each practice, by itself, strengthens introspective awareness, but they also work together to overcome forgetting. The labeling of distractions trains awareness to know which distractions to watch out for in the future when you're checking in. You could say labeling teaches introspective awareness to recognize the faces of your abductors, those dangerous distractions that steal your attention and cause you to forget. When checking in, you can also use labeling. If you check in and notice that a distracting thought, memory, or emotion was about to take you away, you can give it a simple label and re-engage with the breath until the distraction fades. But remember, you aren't trying to eliminate distractions entirely from awareness. As long as they stay in the background, let them come, let them be, and let them go. If you practice diligently, by the time you reach stage 4, you'll have completely stable attention and be able to keep watch over the entire horizon of the mind with introspective awareness. Pain and discomfort. As we start sitting longer, pain and other unpleasant sensations, such as numbness, tingling, and itching, appear. Our bodies aren't used to staying still. When we're fairly stationary in daily life, we still move and fidget. Even when sleeping, we constantly change positions to stay comfortable. The good news is it gets easier to sit still over time. The better news is that eventually you won't have any physical discomfort at all. In fact, sitting still becomes so deliciously pleasant that it takes an act of will to move. But getting accustomed to true stillness takes time and practice. Therefore, always make your